Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of September, recording at 9:55 p.m., and that's British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a just quick review of what's actually been taking place here. And my goodness, this has been a dramatic week in the markets. Not all bad by any means, but volatile. Now, first though, we've had some what I would describe as reassuring surprises earlier this month. Now, the first of those, of course, occurred when President Obama did not bomb Syria after all. And the second one occurred when Larry Summers, who was President Obama's nominee to replace Bernanke and lead the Fed, withdrew his name because it had been really quite controversial, even among the party's Democrats, or not least among the party's Democrats. Now, then the third and most important one here, I think, although the decision not to bomb Syria was certainly a relief for the markets, but the third decision was Ben Bernanke did not commence the QE tapering on Wednesday, as you know. Now, pretty well all Wall Street pundits had predicted that he would, and so there were a lot of short positions in the market on Wednesday, and those people scrambled to recover, to cover, and that produced a sharp rally, and that also attracted some opportunistic buying. Well, those are the good news factors here, and one might have thought that it would have maybe a little bit of carry-forward momentum, but that was pretty much it on Wednesday. Thursday was relatively quiet, but then the market started to reassess in here today, and one of the things that happened here today is that Federal Reserve Bank President of St. Louis, a guy named James Bullard, he volunteered the comment that the decision, he's a voting member on the Fed, that the decision not to commence tapering was borderline, to use his exact words on that. And he said that that had influenced the Fed after weaker data had come in. And then he added somewhat quixotically and unexpectedly, in my opinion, that small tapering is possible next month. Well, you know, you say, we don't think we should do it in September, but it's okay to do it in October. As I say, it seems a little bit strange. Most of the betting is that tapering won't start before we actually get to the end of the year. But nevertheless, certainly James Bullard's comments have unnerved investors in here today. Now, the other factor here, which I think is perhaps causing a little bit of anxiety, is that, let's take Mr. Putin now, who's had quite an active role here in the last few days. Now, you'll remember that this was the guy who told the Russian nation, and indeed the world, back in 2005, that the collapse of the Soviet Empire, and I'll now quote Putin word for word, was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century, unquote. Now, that was in character, judging from previous and subsequent events. Therefore, Mr. Putin's overnight conversion from a KGB Svengali into a white knight who wishes to reduce chemical warfare by persuading Syria's Assad regime to hand over its poison gas arsenal may just be stretching credulity a touch. I'd love to be proved wrong on this, for certain. We don't need more wars, we need fewer of them, and we do need to eliminate this dreadful weapon. But the problem is, actually, was he just stalling for time? Is he going to be able to get Assad to really deliver? And after all, he was ignoring evidence that the attacks had come from Assad's regime. So this may well drag on, and there is a risk that this leads to additional tension, both within the Middle East and also possibly between Russia and the United States. And I think investors are now starting to weigh that possibility. Now, then there's a third factor here in the nearby horizon, and that is that Republicans, well, there's a Bloomberg headline that I picked up in here today. Republicans warn of shutdown as confrontation escalates. Now, this has happened before. It's become something of an annual event, and this is now at hand. So all of a sudden, markets went from very worried about what was going on to suddenly very reassured and confident, and now the worries are starting to creep back in. And today, for instance, Wall Street gave up certainly some ground, with the Dow down nearly 1.2%, lesser declines for the S&P and the NASDAQ, but nonetheless, we did see a softening tone here generally. Now, my view, which you've been repeating in these audios for some time, is that we're going to have plenty of choppy activity overall, because that stock market rally that took place last Wednesday came at the end of what had been a firmish tone generally, and it's pushed these markets back up to higher valuations and to short-term overbought conditions here overall. So, against that background, again, the markets are vulnerable to sort of this choppy ranging that we keep talking about and that you have certainly seen. Now, I don't think that's by any means a disaster. And I think that some of the events that I've been talking about here in the last few minutes are part of the ebb and flow during any market year that we actually see. There are plenty of conflicting factors that cause a little bit of anxiety or optimism and over-optimism, and that create some volatility. That's the way markets are, driven by people's emotions. But the overall point here is that I think that we're going to see this continue, and I've been talking about for a few months. I think that's really quite likely. I don't think that we need, or I don't feel any need to sell in here in terms of my long-term investment portfolio. Largely because I, like most of those positions, I have more concerns about resources positions. But nevertheless, the valuations, where the valuations are attractive and where the yields are attractive, I think that the longer-term outlook is well remains attractive. And I also have said in other previous Friday audios, big picture audios, that I felt that before the end of this decade that we would see evidence that a new secular bull market was actually underway. We've still got a very low interest rate environment in most countries. Okay, India raised interest rates yesterday because apparently onion prices had soared and were leading to further inflationary problems. But that's more of a one-off here for the most part in terms of the big economies. The short-term interest rates, at any rate, are going to stay very low, and that's a favorable environment for corporations. And I think that certainly the autonomies, the global autonomies that Fuller Money likes so much and that we've been talking about for the last 3 years, they're for the most part in very healthy positions. They strengthened their balance sheets back after the 2008 blowout in markets. They let a lot of workers go. They cut divisions that were not profitable. In other words, they went into survival mode, really, and got very serious. They benefited from the extremely low interest rates that we've had. They have benefited enormously from the technological advances that have been taking place at an ever faster pace. And as you know, that's one of my big themes here. That's something that we're going to see unfolding for a very, very long time. And so corporate earnings have, and corporations, I should say, have way outperformed their home economies for the most part. And that's something that I think will continue really for a very long time. So I think the key point here is that the most attractive investment area by far over the last few years, and I think over the next many years, is likely to be stock markets. Now, what other hurdles do we need to look out for? Because I mentioned a few short-term factors in here. The next obvious big one is when we actually knuckle down and see that quantitative easing not only being tapered, but actually closed out. It's kind of a no-brainer that that's going to cause some market anxiety. But overall, the hope is, and it's a hope that I share, is that people will jump and react, particularly initially. But if this tapering is actually taking place because the global economy is clearly doing better, then of course it makes sense. And I think then anxiety over tapering would gradually be replaced by just confidence in the overall global environment that actually was improving, and then we probably wouldn't have to worry too much about stock markets until short-term, until central banks were raising short-term interest rates and the economy was beginning, and global economies, I should say, were beginning to show some signs of overheating, reflected by surging commodity prices and a degree of euphoria in the markets. We don't have that in this environment here, needless to say. Okay, what about other assets in this environment overall? Well, Fuller Money is certainly on record in terms of saying that the global bull market in long-dated government bonds, in other words, those falling yields, was over. And we were early on that because it's really was looking that way several years ago, before the big 2008 meltdown that we saw in markets. And that really bought a little bit of extra time, bought a few years extra time for that global bull market in bonds. More and more investors piled into the fixed interest sector overall and drove those yields down to record lows. Well, they then doubled off those lows, taking the U.S. Treasuries and most other long-dated government bond markets followed those moves proportionately, and I have been saying, as is Owen, that we are in the early stages of the bear market here, where yields are likely to rise over the medium to longer term. Now, what might be a positive development here in the short term is that that surge that we had seen from May into September for these long-dated government bond yields certainly was a concern to the Fed and other central banks, and understandably so. It was the markets really exerting their own form of monetary tightening. All right, it wasn't severe, but it was a very rapid change, certainly. Now, if Bernanke does hold off on the tapering, and if we don't see any tapering really until the end of the year at the earliest, I think nerves will calm down. I think we might see those bond yields actually range a little bit lower in what I would describe as a medium-term consolidation phase overall. And that would be a generally favorable background, and most stock markets, I think, would be able to push a little bit higher, seeing those long-term yields come down and not being too concerned about the actual tapering. That's my hunch, really, at this stage, and that's why I'm not wanting to chop any of my long-term equity positions, although I will emphasize, as I have in these audios, that in terms of whatever you're doing, you know, I don't like to sell when markets are weak. The time to sell, if you're going to sell, is when markets are doing so well that you're getting big overextensions relative to the rising 200-day moving averages, because you know that that's not normal, that that's a bit euphoric, and that inevitably it's going to get a pullback relatively soon and go back to that MA and often somewhat below it. What I don't see, and against this background of low short-term interest rates, is I do not see a bear market unfolding at this time, although the choppy activity that we can get, which is exacerbated by the high-frequency trading, we've certainly seen that this week, that volatility in the emerging markets will be high beta. And so, you know, we can quite easily see setbacks of 20% or more, as we did with the ASEAN sector country stock markets. Now, they have recovered most of those losses subsequently, but the point is, expect to see that volatility. I don't think we will see anything in terms of the developed markets such as Wall Street, Japan, the UK, the main European markets, the big European markets. I don't think we'll see anything in the plus 25% range to the downside, or if that's too optimistic a statement, I certainly don't think we will see anything like the huge bear markets that we had in 2000 and the 2008 and early 2009. Veteran subscribers will remember that I often ask the question, saying, because we had those two very big bear markets, did it make it more likely or less likely that we would see a third one? Well, people, all investors all over the world were worrying about a third one. Indeed, some of them still are of that magnitude. But my premise, which I think is behaviorally and historically valid, was that two very big bear markets of that sort within 8 years made it considerably less likely, not more likely, that we would see a third move of that magnitude. I don't think we will. I think we can get little cyclical bear markets over the next few years. We may see a few, but again, I'm on record, and I'll conclude on this by saying that next secular bull market should be evident before the end of this decade. And the driving forces for that, which I have often mentioned here. The key one is this accelerating rate of technological innovation that I've mentioned. Okay, getting back to the long-dated government bonds, you can see I keep returning to equities. It's such an attractive sector, I think, for the long-term outlook here, following this long, choppy number of years that we've had that we're now in the latter stages of. But government bonds, I will not be buying government bonds, that's for sure. There will be some shorting opportunities, although the trouble is you pay, or the yield works against you, rather, in the short positions in that sector. But I think that, again, some investors are holding on to their long-dated government bonds because they say, well, okay, I hold it to maturity and I get my capital back, which is true, but it really does knock out your flexibility in terms of your investments. And as long as you're aware of that and don't mind that, then okay. But the far more attractive sector is going to remain equities. Although it will also be more volatile, goes with the territory. In terms of commodity markets, so let me take currencies first. We have seen certainly some volatility in currencies this year. The main factor behind that, I think it really started when Japan took the very wise step, in my opinion, one that Fuller Money had long called for, and Japan became very active in weakening its overvalued currency. And it had been systemically overvalued. And it was quite a masochistic situation for the Japanese. We're talking about 20 years of overvaluation of that currency, or becoming increasingly overvalued. Now, when the yen weakened quite sharply, earlier in the year, excuse me, that caused chaos in some of the Asian countries, not least the ASEAN markets. It also weighed on India as well. But I think that's well. I think we can be fairly confident that the worst of that is very much in the background overall, and those very weak currencies have been having a rather good September. So we've seen the Indian rupee, we've seen the ASEAN currencies, we've seen them stage some significant rallies over the last few weeks, and I think we're going back to what was we've seen previously as a more stable environment for currencies, where I think we will get some certainly plenty of fluctuations and a little bit of short-term volatility. But I think in terms of dramatic trends, those will be very much the exception rather than the rule. You know, for years, people have been worried that the euro is just going to collapse and fall apart. Well, we never felt that way, and the euro is pretty firm here at 135, 1.3524 against the US dollar. And same thing was said about sterling. People have been trying to sell books on the basis that sterling was just going to collapse and collapse. Well, it's at 160 here against the US dollar. We're range bound here for these currencies overall. And I think that's likely to remain the case. No country wants to have a very strong currency because that puts them at a competitive disadvantage in terms of global trade. And no currency, or beg your pardon, no country wants to see its currency in free fall, and because any responsible government's going to have to come in and raise interest rates, as India did, to try to stem that move. Okay, so I think we'll actually see a quieter period overall in terms of currency market activity. But on a very long-term view, I think the U.S. dollar, which had fallen so much over the last 20, 25 years, is in a long-term type 3 base support building phase. And I think that when the global economy is stronger, that we're likely to see a somewhat firmer U.S. dollar overall. And not because of reasons of fear, but really for reasons of confidence in the U.S. economy, because the U.S. will have this big advantage, which you see, which we all know about right now, and that is competitive energy prices, because it pioneered and developed and used the fracking technology with enormous success to boost its production of not only shale oil, but also shale gas. And it has vast quantities of both shale oil and gas. There are many other countries around the globe that have substantial resources of shale oil and gas. The nature of these deposits varies quite a bit from country to country, but the technology keeps improving, and these are resources which can be utilized. There's just been a little bit of inertia or fear, worried about political backlashes and so on, that have prevented too many countries, in my opinion, from developing their shale resources. And that works to their advantage overall, and some countries are paying unnecessarily high energy prices here overall. Global warming risk is put forward as the argument in defense of this, but what we see too often is that you can weaken the economies significantly, and then you have to get other measures to lower energy costs. And as we found with Germany, having to reopen coal-fired power plants, other countries have done that as well. And actually, the U.S., which was kind of regarded as the pariah here for going ahead with the fracking, has found that it's produced so much natural gas, which is much less of a pollutant than coal, for sure, and also considerably less than oil. And so its pollution levels have actually declined. But okay, I don't want to digress too much on that overall. But I was talking about the U.S. dollar being stronger over the next few years as the global economy improved, and the three reasons that I was citing. First one is competitive energy costs, which are available to other countries, but they don't have the same competitive advantage right now. The other one is technological innovation. And the U.S. has the lead in that field, and it is therefore benefiting the most from technological innovation. And the third one are the autonomies, the corporate autonomies, because they are the major beneficiaries of technological innovation. And the United States has more autonomies than any other country in the world. Although they are certainly evident in other developed economies. Now, moving on to the commodity sector here overall, the CCI index is that's the computer, the continuous commodity index is trading. Really only 15 points above that 500 boundary, which has been its lower boundary here for the last few years. And so what that indicates, of course, is that commodity prices have been relatively soft generally. Oil prices are an exception. They're a little bit too high, but they have continued to soften in here this week, which I'm actually very glad to see. And veteran subscribers will remember that one of my biggest, one of my biggest fears is that we would get spikes in energy prices from time to time, and those would cause recessions. Last serious spike occurred in 2008, and it was a big factor in the recession that followed, in addition, obviously, to the financial shenanigans and over-leverage that was that had occurred. Now, today, the Brent is at 109.30. That's a little high. And that's the most important rate, because that's what most countries around the world, their energy prices are going to be more in line with Brent. The WTI is lower. It's not significantly lower, but it's at 104.67. As I speak, I'd like to see those prices back below the $100 level. I think that's possible, but certainly we need to have a little bit more stability in the Middle East than we have right now for that to actually take place. At the same time, though, we don't want to see oil move down too much, because that would suggest that the global economy was very weak. The global economy, as you know, is recovering at a slow, sporadic rate. If you take the beginning of that recovery for the global economy, I think that some people say that, well, it's unrealistic to look at anything before mid-2009, well, then we really are... we're just 4 years since the beginning of that that actual recovery, and there's lots of good historic evidence, as you've heard me say before, that shows that it takes at least 5 to 7 years at least before you get back to anything like normal global GDP growth rates. And I think in this instance it will take longer over the next few years. But that's not a bad environment here overall. But we certainly don't want because growth is gradually improving. Corporate growth is doing better. What we do not want is to see another spike in energy prices anytime soon. And if we get more countries committed to fracking, and also focusing more on solar energy rather than windmills as the main source of their renewables, hopefully even new era nuclear power, although that's a hard sell these days, mainly as a result of the Fukushima accident overall. But one of my themes for that secular bull market that I have talked about will be, if I'm right, it will be a somewhat lower price for global energy in real, meaning, of course, inflation-adjusted terms. So... concentrating on these other commodities here, the volatility in precious metals this week has been astonishing. Goldman Sachs is talking these precious metals downwards, and so you can bet they have had a lot of short positions on and still have a lot of short positions on. Some of those were squeezed on Wednesday, when we got the very sharp rally with gold rallying $60. I think it hit $65 at one stage on Wednesday. Well, the rally didn't last very long, and gold is down $40 in here today. And silver, which surged a couple of dollars last Wednesday is down $1.50 in here today. You can bet there's a lot of high frequency trading going on in these markets. Choppy activity here overall. I think there's a reasonable chance that what we're seeing in gold, silver, and platinum, there's a reasonable chance that this is part of a base extension phase, and because they had those very good rallies off lows earlier in the year. Those lows broke the consistent downward trending characteristics and then became overbought, and normally when that happens, then you get a lengthy pullback and right-hand extension, base formation extension phase. So I think that's a real possibility. Goldman Sachs disagrees, and they are certainly a big influence in these markets, and they're talking about them weakening into 2014, well into 2014. Against that background, my feeling is just to be very careful. But when the precious metals are quite weak, that's the time to be thinking about moving in and doing a little bit of incremental buying. And when they surge, it's time to lighten. This is a buy low, sell high environment. Some people would say, well, it's always a buy low, sell high environment, but this more so. We're getting more volatility in here right now. Industrial metals, they are hopefully, I say, in a bit of a support building, base building phase. They're certainly not expensive. There's too much supply around, and the global economy is not strong enough to mop up these cheaper supplies. So I think we will see and need to see a little bit of cutback in terms of production. Of course, with producers, nobody wants to be the one that starts to cut the production. They want other people to cut the production to push the price up so that they can continue with their production. But I think we will see some production cutbacks over the next many months to help create an environment for somewhat firmer in industrial metal prices. Grains and beans, the staple. Staple foods, this is really good news because so far the crops have been quite successful this year. We, on average, I should say, we had seven biblical bad years of crops, and that certainly increased food prices, caused a lot of hardship in the poorer countries. We had good crops in South America earlier this year. We are having a good harvest here in the United States right now, not too bad in Europe. Let's hope that continues for a while longer, keep those food prices lower overall. So I think that's a wrap. And I'll just say, have a fantastic weekend. All the best.